Yes, we refuse to exercise the permission. But it's not a tzar, she'ein tzaru.
The ein tzar is a mitzvah, because it's not...
Because his tzar is not a mitzvah.
...the remorse from a, because of the mitzvah.
Of an afapi.
The afapi, she'aveinu so...
Mitzvah.
Mitzvah.
Although his aveinu is a mitzvah.
Although his aveinu is a mitzvah, he's not, he doesn't... have regret that he missed out on a chance to do
this. That he hasn't got that type of remorse. He's got anguish and he's got mental agony. Fine. That you've got, you want to have that you've permitted to have.
That doesn't put it.
In the case of Thomas Spinoza Bayom, he's not even allowed to have mental anguish. He's not allowed to. But in this case, he's permitted to have it. But it's not a mitzvah. Yes. And the person who says that on the Friday night he's got to read the Shema, says the Abaya, Sovah.
And the one who said the Tana that says that he's Chayev.
He says that Tilda doesn't make him potter. He says, and on Friday night, he can't make a deal, but he's got to read the Shema. Says the buyer, why does the Tana say he's got to read the Shema?
Because that he doesn't have the Tirda from a mitzvah.
See, because this Tana says that if you don't have the Tirda from not doing a mitzvah, that doesn't make you part from a mitzvah. That doesn't make you potter from reading the Shema. So all Abaya says is this. This is the way Rashi learns it. And the whole Gemara comes out and makes sense. Abaya says like this. These two Baraisas. The one Baraisa says that on Friday night you don't read the Shema. And the other one says on Friday night you do read the Shema. According to Abaya, on either Friday night, is he allowed to make the bill or not?
He's
not allowed to make a bill. If he's not allowed to make a bill, then why says the first Tana that he doesn't have to make the Shema? He doesn't read the Shema on Friday night.
It's torrid.
Here is the question. We've got two Baraisas. According to the one Baraisa, on Friday night he doesn't have to read the Shema. According to the other Baraisa, on Friday night he must read the Shema. Now we are working these two Baraisas according to Abaya. According to Abaya, is he allowed to make the beer on Friday night?
No, in neither case.
So in the first case where the Tana says that he's potter from Shema, why should he be potter from Shema?
In both cases
he doesn't have to make a deal. It's a buyer. You follow? Both cases he can't make a deal. The first case says he doesn't read the Shema. If he doesn't make a beer, then why doesn't he read the Shema?
Because
he's got distress that he can't make the mitzvah. That's a buyer. Have you got it?
Or
He's got distress that he can't do the mitzvah. Therefore, he's potter from reading the Shema, is the first Tana. Have you got that? The second Tana says, He doesn't read the Shema. The second Tana says he must read the Shema. Right. Does he make the deal on Friday night or doesn't he?
He doesn't.
I see he doesn't. if he doesn't make the deal on Friday night, then a buyer, according to you, why does he read the Shema? He's got the stress that he can't do a mitzvah. He said, this Talmud says that's not a reason for not reading the Shema. The difference is on this very point. If the stress that you can't do a mitzvah, is it a reason to be quoted from a mitzvah, or is it not? That is the machlokes here. That is the machlokes here. Brings us to the end of this piece of Gemara, more or less. But what we've got is that according to Rava it is conclusive, and according to Abaya it's not conclusive. Martin, how are you getting on tonight?
That last point you just made, why is it not conclusive?
To Abaya. Because Abaya says, he learns it. Chosen is potter, the Mishnah where it is Chosen potter be kriya Shema on Friday night, he says because he can't do the beer. He can't make the mitzvah, so he's got tsar, he can't make the mitzvah, so he's potter. But you see, I bring a proof from there that you can't make a beer. From the Baraisas, both Baraisas, you can't make a beer. The one Baraisa says if you can't make a beer, therefore you are potter from because he's got tzar and he can't do a mitzvah. The other Baraisa says, I don't agree with because of tzar that you can't do a mitzvah, it's not a reason to be potter from a mitzvah. But a buyer learns and gets through, he can find a way of learning three sources, one Mishnah and two Baraisas, in a manner where it's supposing that you can't make the first beer on Sunday.
So he is conclusive then.
That you can't make a beer.
Yes.
And Rovers from there brings the proof that you can make a beer. So now we say, but we find that we've got Tanoim now. And a little bit further, just look a little bit further. He says, Vahani Tanoi ki Hani Tanoi. I come to a first stage, another stage. Now just look how the stages go. The first thing we work out that it was a machlokus between Abaya and Rav, and on the previous stage it was a machlokus between Rav and Shmuel. Rav said you can do the first beer on Friday night, and Shmuel said you can't do the first beer. You weren't here, doesn't matter. And Shmuel said you can't do it. So it's a machlokus between Rav and Shmuel, who are 3rd century Amoraim. It's a machlokus between Abaya and Rava, who are already almost 4th century Amoraim. And now Rava says, yes, but what you've got to know is that it goes right back to pre-2nd century. It goes back to Tanoim. Because here we've got the Baraisa, where one time in the Baraisa says that on Friday night if he hasn't made the beer, he's potter from Kriyat Shema, and the other one says he's got to read the Kriyat Shema. So what have we got? According to Robert, a Mishnah that says that you can make the first beer on Shabbat, Friday night. One Baraisa that says you can make the first beer on Shabbos Friday night, and one Baraisa that says you can't make the first beer on Shabbos Friday night. So we've got Tanoim. So he says, and these Tanoim are dependent on earlier Tanoim. Have you got it? So now he's going to bring still earlier Tanoim. He says this goes back still earlier. Where do we see it? Oh my Rava, Vahani Tanoi, and these Tanoim, Kihani Tanoi, like these Tanoim, which I'm going to quote now, Desanyo, because we learned in another Baraisa, and this is still an earlier Baraisa, Hakunes es Habasuro, he who buries a Basuro. Lo Yibo Bitachila B'Shabbos is not allowed to make the first beer on Shabbos. Simple plain. The Chachomim Matiri, but the Chachomim, they permit it. So here we've got plate, we've got a son of Kamal, the first is in the same brisa, where one says it's not permitted and the other says it is permitted. So it goes right back now. Asks the Gemara, man chachomim? Asks the Gemara, who are the chachomim? Omar Rabbo said, Rabbo Rabbi Shimon he. The chachomim is Rabbi Shimon, with whom we have got a very intimate acquaintanceship already. The Omar Dovashim is Kavim Mutter. Because Rabbi Shimon is the one who says that a Dovashim is Kavim is Mutter. Because what you want to say is the Isur here. The issue is that he's making a Pesach, he's making an entrance. He doesn't want to make the entrance. The old Gemara that we learned before. Is it the Pesach would, the Pesach would, sorry, the, if he wants the dam, if he wants the dam, sorry, the Pesach, he can't get the dam unless he makes the Pesach. He can't get the dam basurim, he can't get the blood out unless he makes an entrance. So the entrance he hasn't got, he doesn't do that with the purpose of making an entrance. And it is a question of making a chabura, of making a wound. He doesn't want to make a wound. He's having a beer. He's not thinking of making a wound. So that is a Dovusha enemy's cabin. He's got no intention, his intent is not to make it. So therefore it is permitted. So we see that that Rabbi Shimon says it is permitted. Yeah, we've got a plain place where Rabbi Shimon says it's permitted. And the first time it says it's not permitted. And Rabbi Shimon says it's permitted because the Dovah She'enim is Kavim is Mutter. So whatever we say, if we say that he it's Dam Mifkar Poki, then what is it that he wants? He wants to get the Dam. He wants to get the Dam out. If he wants to get the Dam out, then the Pesach that he makes is the Dovah She'enim is Kavim. He hasn't got any intention of making an entrance. An entry, yes, but not an entrance. So that is a Dovash Ein Miskaveh. What do we say that Dam is Kaburi Vichpar? So he's making a wound. He's making a wound. Is he thinking that he wants to make a wound? It's not permitted to make a wound on Shabbos. It's not permitted to shecht an animal on Shabbos because you're making a wound. But there I'm making the wound, I want to make the wound, I want to kill the animal so that I can eat it. But when he makes a wound in the woman, he makes a wound there. Does he want the wound? He doesn't want the wound. He wants to have a beer. But he can't have the beer unless he makes a wound. But he hasn't got the intention of making a wound. And it also says Rabbi Shimon, only if it's a Dovash in his coven. But this is a Dovash in his coven, he hasn't got any wound.
So, can you translate that last?
Dovash in his coven. The law is, there's a machlokas in the Gemara as follows. If, for example, I want to sow seeds, and in order to sow seeds I go into the soil and I, with my finger, with something else, I make a little furrow so that I put the seeds in. I make a furrow. That is not permitted to do on Shabbos. It's cholesh. One of the laws that prohibited you on Shabbos. What is the position if I don't make the furrow? What I do, I've got a bench and I want to take the bench over there and I pull this bench across and I make a furrow. Also making a furrow.
I understand the logic, I just didn't understand the words in Hebrew.
This is, it's a dovor, it's a matter, she'eino miskaveh. for which he hasn't got kavod, no. He hasn't got the intent.
Okay, that's
what I'm saying. See? So he hasn't got the intent.
Mm-hmm.
So here also, what he, the thing is, he's making an entrance. An entrance is a binyan. It's a building. And you're going to find afterwards that Rashi brings a proof that in doing something in a person, for example, doing that type of plastic surgery. Person does plastic surgery. Plastic surgery is binyan. It's building. But where do we find building in a human being? That putting a nose onto a person that's lost in an accident. Putting a nose on, it's binyan. Because it says in the Torah, and God took the side of the man that he had taken from the woman, by Yivet Esatela, and he built the side into a woman. It used the word by Yivet, and he built. So we see that the Torah uses the word binyan for that also. That's also prohibited. You follow? So if it is that he makes an entrance, and he wants to have an entrance, not an entry, there's a difference between an entry and an entrance. He wants to have an entrance in the world, that's a Dovashim is coming. But he doesn't want the entrance, he wants to have the beer, or he wants to take the blood out. He wants an entry, but he doesn't want an entrance. So that's a Dovashim is coming. And Rabbi Shimon says that a Dovashim is coming is permitted. So here we've got right back now, here we've got an interesting thing already. So we've got a Mishnah that says it's permitted. We've got a Baraisa that says it's permitted. We've got another Baraisa where the Chachomim say it's permitted. So we've got three that it is permitted. We've got one Baraisa that says it's also, and we've got a Tana Kama that says it's also. So we've got three permitted, two against.
What is also?
Prohibited. Mutter. You ought to what?
Now where are we up to in terms of tomorrow?
Where are we up to?
As far, how far down the line?
We're up to where Rova says, I'm prepared to concede this. He says, the Mishnah, Chosen Potter Mikriya Shema, says that you are allowed to make the beer first beer on Shabbos. The Braisa that says that he's potter the third night from, if he hasn't made it, that he's potter, means that you can make the first beer on Friday night, etc. No question about it. But, says Rogo, I concede that there is another view. I concede that there is a Braisa that says you're not permitted to make it. I concede that there is a Braisa where one authority says you are permitted, another one says, Akilne says Abzulo, where one says he's not allowed to make the first beer on Friday night, and another, the Chachom, you say Matiri, and the Chachom, you say you are, and who is the Chachom, Rabbi Shimon? So, yeah, we've got it. He said, I learned it that you are allowed to, says Rabbi. But I do concede that there is a school of thought that doesn't permit it. That is as far as we get. I've got it all clear. It's not difficult to understand. What do you want to ask?
Just to clarify something for me. In terms of the big picture of the Gemara, are we now reaching the point where we are now tying back in with Yibayla Umahu on Dakhe on the base? In other words, the debate back and forth.
All the time we are trying to determine whether the first beer is permitted to be made on Shabbos or not. We've got so far already where we have traced it back that this is a different Iboyelu who when we posed the question, it was Amoroim who were discussing it. Now we've got so far that we've traced it back that it was already Tarnoim who were discussing it. Now we've just got a 1.5 more minutes, 90 seconds. Just allow me to go on a little bit further. Omar Le'Abaya. So you say it's Rabbi Shimon. Amalei Abaya said, Abaya, the whole melody of Rabbi Shimon, the Psikreisha below Yomus. But Rabbi Shimon says that where it is a Psikreisha, even a Dovish Enem is covered, is not permitted. And since he cannot make the entry without making an entrance, it's something that must be. For example, if I take water and I wash my hands outside this window, and pansies are growing there, and my kabbalah is not to water the pansies, the watering is a dovish enem is covered, I have not any intention of watering the pansies. So Rabbi Shimon will say, yes, but when you put your hands over there and the water goes down there, willy-nilly you are watering the pansies. The pansies are going to grow as a result of this. It can't be otherwise. Then it's not permitted. That is called a psikreisha. You're cutting off the head and you say you have no intention of killing the person. All you want to do is that he should be without a head, that's all. So that you can't do. So it's a psikreisha below Yomus. You cut off his head and he won't die. I, Omar, Rover, Rabbi, yes, ask Omar, lay Abaya, said Abaya to him, Bohomoda, Rabbi Shimon, Psikreisha, below Yomus. Omar, lay, so Rabbi answered Abaya, Lokaha, Lolu, Babliin, Shein, Bekin, Bahatoya, Ela, Yesh, Bekin, Bahatoya. So he says, well, he says, the Babliin, they don't know how to do Hatoya. That is that you can do a first biur without rupturing the hand. Possible to do it? So he says, Bavli in don't know how to do it. Is it possible?
Yes.
Bavli in don't know how to do it. He says, but we in Israel, but we in Israel, I told you some diversion. I told you it's not by the Bertie.
What was psik, right? So what is it? Literally, what is that?
Psik, cutting off. Ratio of the head. It's psik ratio. You cut off the head. It's just below your muscle and he won't die. And a man you give you, he's up for murder. So, guilty or not guilty? He says, not guilty. Tell the court what you did. He said, I took an axe and I beheaded him. He said, not yet. He said, yes, I didn't want to kill him. You say that I wanted to kill him. I didn't want to. I just wanted to take his head off. That's all. So you can't do that, you see. He said, it's something. He hasn't got kavanah to make an entrance. But if you can't do it any other way, he said, you can. It's possible that you can. Since it's possible that you can, it's not a secretion. That brings us, we start again in Yirtzah Hashem, when we meet again. David, how have you been getting on tonight?
It looks like it's a good review.
Pardon, this looks
I'm
like...
I'm fine with you.
Oh, you will, fine. If we get as far as that, Yosef, how are you getting on? So, once we get this from next Shabbos, I'm sorry, next week, when we meet, if we meet, we start from this point now, the last brisa that Rabbi Shimon permits it, question of Atoya, and then we haven't got to go very much further.
Is there any doubt that we will meet next week?
And not as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, thank God.
I want to tell you that I've prepared a long speech for you. Why, if we were not going to meet next Sunday?
Why?
I had a whole speech prepared, and that so very often happens with my sermons that I prepare them and I don't deliver them. And the speech was, yes, a public holiday and you don't come.
Public holiday.
And I've got 5 people. Public holiday. My public holiday is Erev Rosh Hashanah. The next show is Erev Rosh Hashanah. That's my public holiday. So why should I come? When it suits you not to come, you don't come. That was my speech.
That's
as
we can.
So, you've just been the Sunday here.
What time tomorrow morning? Yeah.
Well, what's happening tomorrow morning? Are we done? is quite clear to us what has happened. They are, I suppose, two points which we've got to watch out for as far as the first page is concerned. And the one is that there are two separate principles involved. The one principle is how the oral law was transmitted. The second principle was who was the custodian of the oral law. And these are two separate principles. And the Rambam in this work deals with the custodianship of the oral law, and he's got an introduction to Zroi.
I'll just give you some idea of what that introduction is.
This is his introduction to Seder Zroi, which is also an introduction to the Talmud. It's much longer and far more involved than this one is, far longer. Here he deals with another problem. He's not dealing here with psak, with codification. Here he's dealing purely with halacha. This is the workshop of the Torah. And here he is concerned in the oral law as such and how it was transmitted. And I read to you the appropriate part a few weeks ago, how Moshe received the Torah at Mount Sinai from Hashem, and how everything was explained to him. Because the Torah without the Torah Shabbat doesn't make sense. Hello, David. I gave you the three examples of how the Torah can't make sense. Do you remember the three examples that I gave you? Tefillin is one. You shall bind them for a hand and for a sign upon your hand, they shall be for frontlets between your eyes, means nothing. How can you? What's another one?
Sukkah.
Sukkah is another one, quite right. There's one word, you shall dwell in booths, because your ancestors dwelt in booths when they went out of Egypt. That's all he tells us. But how the sukkah must be made, that it can be only from gidulei karka, it can only be from vegetation. And the vegetation mustn't be mechubalakark, it mustn't be joined to the earth and trained over. It's got to be severed. And it must be tausivalaminel osui. It mustn't be really made. You can't just have the cheaper going and then cut it off, because it means it's a ready made sukkah. You've got to make it a sukkah. So if you do this, you've got to take the foliage off and then put it on again. All that we know from the Torah Shabbat and many other laws. That is as far as the sukkah is concerned. Any other examples do you remember that I gave you? You should love your neighbors yourself. It's nonsense. Means that. Did we do the Rambam? How the Rambam explained that you should love your neighbors yourself?
No.
How does he explain it? Do you remember?
Yeah, I'm trying to.
Yes.
Do for him something that you would expect him to do for you under the same
circumstances. That's the whole point. That's what the Rambam says.
Yeah.
That it means if you were put into his if you were put into his situation, would you expect him to do it for you? And if you would expect it for to do it for you, that is something that you've got to do for him. That is that's what the Rambam says. The Rambam says it in one short line. He says, and he says it just by the way he just says it. To the Rambam it was clear. He had the Torah about Benjamin, it was clear, there wasn't a problem. Another one. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Well, can you imagine what a mess that would be without a Torah about faith? Says an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth.
First of all, the whole credit system is to have that of owning money, the finance, the principles of banking that were laid down by Hillel.
So, an eye for an eye, iron darkest iron, chain darkest. And we know it's the law of compensation, and it's not the law of retaliation, and all that we know from the Torah Shabbat Peh. So that is the Torah Shabbat Peh. How was the Torah Shabbat Peh taught? We discussed that in great detail, that Moshe first of all got it from the Rabbeinu Shleiman, and then he brought in Aaron, and he taught it to Aaron. Then Aaron, his brother, came and sat down this side of him, and he called him the two sons of Aaron, and the two sons he taught them, and they came and sat down to him, and then he called in, that was how many, that once to Aaron, once to the two sons, and then, the Shivims, yes, that's right, many called him the Shivims, the Canaan, the 70, the Canaan, the Sanhedrin, and he taught it to them. And then he taught it to the whole of Am Yisrael. The whole of Am Yisrael. Right? So that means that Aaron had heard it four times, and then Aaron taught it so that each one could hear it four times, and then the whole Am Yisrael sat together and they studied the Talmud. Yes?
Does Am Yisrael include the men and the women? Or just the men?
Torah, it would appear, was studied only by the men. But the women came into a lot, you know. I just want to tell you that there is the wife of Rabbi Meir, Bruria, used to learn 300 halachos a day. Where you get a rov who learns 300 halachos a day today? But she wasn't considered a lamdan, her husband was the lamdan. See, it depends. It depends who the husband is. It depends who the husband is. But that was Bruria. So you've got to realize there was a lady in London, Mrs. Flora Sassoon. She was from the Sassoon family, and Flora Sassoon was a Malumeda, she knew a tremendous amount. And when a rabbi came to London, she put him through his paces. Every rabbi tried to come get an appointment with her. First of all, if you came to collect money for the yeshiva, there was a lot of money coming. And secondly, it was already a step in the right direction. But she put him through his paces. But she didn't regard herself as a great London tip, but she was a Malumeda, she knew a tremendous amount. So these women, you mustn't think that they didn't know anything. In comparison with their husbands, they didn't know anything. But today, these women would have been too good to have been chief rabbis. It would have been too much, you see. But in comparison with their husband, they didn't know anything. Everything is a matter of comparison. So, that is the Torah Shabbat Peh. That is the way the Torah Shabbat Peh was taught. And Mark, I have to take it, that the men that taught it, the women helped, they listened, they brought the children, they looked after it, And after that, it was taught from the disciple to... Now comes another thing. It's a question of the custodian of law, the responsibility that you see that it's taught, that it's kept intact. that it's preserved. That responsibility went over from Moshe Rabbeinu to Yeshua. From Yeshua it went over to the judges, to the Shoftim. From the Shoftim it went over to the Nevi'im. And from the Nevi'im it went over to Anshei Knesset Agadolo. And there we already came here. And we went, last time, we went right down to Rabbi Yehuda Hanossi. We went as far as Rabbi Yehuda Hanossi. And that is the close of the Mishnah, in the redaction of the Mishnah, in approximately the year 200.
What does redaction mean?
The redaction means, I don't want to use the word the author of the Mishnah, because he wasn't the author of the Mishnah.
I understand.
The editorship, well, he edited it. He took the Torah Shebal Peh, and he took a body of the Torah Shebal Peh. He excluded a tremendous amount because it would have defeated its own purpose if he had put in everything that was known of the Torah Shebal Peh.
Right.
And he put this into a work, and that work was the Mishnah. And it became an authoritative work for the Torah Shebal Peh. But please don't fall into the trap of thinking that it's a code of laws. It's not a code of laws. Not a code of laws at all. In those days, they didn't want a code of laws, they didn't think of a code of laws. And I told you that today, in those days, they felt about a code of laws when the Rav Yitzchok of Farsi made his code of laws around about the year 1000, 11th century, he made his code of laws, he had a tremendous amount of opposition. They didn't like it at all. Can you imagine how I feel when I see Yizkadash Shemei Rabo and I see it written in Latin characters? Can you imagine the way I feel about it? What have we come to?
Something even, I saw that now when we started dabbing and I had an even worse thought. It says there's an instruction that should be, in what direction it should be read.
Well, I was just saying, see, I've actually been to a funeral where the mourner was given this to read, and he started, Yivro ba'om ba'rabu shmei b'yizkadash yizkadal. He read it from left to right.
And that has, thank you, what have we come to?
Can you see what we've come to? Now, I mean, my head stands on edge. Even to a greater degree, if you would have told them in the days of the Gemara that it would be necessary to make a work like the Rambam, their heads stood on edge. What do you mean? What are you speaking about? You've got to go, you know, you want to look up a law, you got a law in the Gemara. It doesn't say explicitly, work it out yourself. That is what they did. Every Jew was a learned Jew, it didn't enter his mind to have it. And when the Rif did it before the Rambam, he did it about 150 years, less than that, 120 years before the Rambam, he had tremendous opposition. And his greatest opponent was a man, when he was on his deathbed, he sent for the Rif. It was a man who was greater than the Rif. He sent for the Rif, and he asked him, Achilo, he asked him to forgive him. He was on his deathbed, to forgive him for having opposed him as strongly as he did. And he said, I see now that the time is coming when we will have to have it. And as an act of his confidence in him, he asked him to take over the care of his son. And the Rif did it, and made a great lumpen out of his son. But I just want you to know what we have come to. You've got to realize we have gone so far, you've got no idea how far we've got. You know, here. This is a page of Gemara. Page of Gemara here. Rashi's script is different from this script. This script is different from the script we use in the Torah. We don't use the script in the Torah. In the Torah we use a more elaborate script with targum, with crowns on the letters, but we don't use it here. Why don't we use it here? Can't do it. That is the Torah that was given by the Rebbeinu Shlomo himself, and we are going to use the same script. Can't do it. That is the script that Rebbeinu Shlomo gave. We object to those wedding invitations that are printed, and the Torah script is used for the wedding invitations. We don't like it. That script is used only for the Torah, for tefillin and for mezuzahs, and that's where it ends. But you use it and an artist comes and he takes that script, we don't like it at all. Alright. Rashi comes along. He didn't put prison company excluded. Rashi comes along. And he writes his commentary. First of all, he doesn't even use the script of the Gemara. Too holy for that. So he uses a different script. Not even the same script as the Gemara. How can one do a thing like that? It was suggested to Reb Meir Simcha, they wanted to print his chidushim, his works on the Gemara. At the bottom of the Gemara he had a fit. He was the greatest Gaon of this century, died in 1926. That they should print his work on the same page as the Gemara. He said you can't even print it at the back of the Gemara. You've got to make a separate work, build a separate work. I want you just to understand the sensitivity. They knew what it meant. I was shown the other day a presidential report where there was a page from the Gemara.
Yeah, yeah.
And this piece of Gemara was taken out and the president's picture was put there.
You can.
Now, just... I mean, you've got to understand. I mean, where we have come to, how we have sunk. I mean, to what low level we have reached. You, I want you just to know.
Jimmy Carter's
That's why I said it. Jewish. From some institution. I don't even know what institution.
Oh, I wasn't. But that was a terrible effrontery.
Yeah. So took this out, and put this man's picture in. And you know, I mean, that was canon. I mean, have you ever heard of anything like that? That isn't the worst part of it. That is not the worst part of it. The worst part of it is that it's accepted, it's very nice. Everybody thinks it's wonderful. Nothing wrong with them, something wrong with me. This is wonderful. Now, can you see to where we have sunk? That is what you've got to realize. These people were the custodians of the law that it comes about. These are the custodians of the law. These are the people that exist even today. And these are the people that when it comes something like this, they protest. conduit. Those are the custodians of the Lord. That is what they are there for. So we go right down. We've gone as far as the Ephesians.
The pages I've passed out, the two pages, the top page should be the second page. The second page should be
the second page, yes. Has it got a page 4 on the top page? Is there a page 4 on it?
It should say Navi.
What does it say? Navi. That's right. That is the page I'm on. So what we got on the previous page, as far as Rabbeinu HaKodesh, so the first chidush in this introduction of the Rambam is that he's speaking about the custodians of the law. He's not speaking of how it was transmitted. He's speaking about the preservation of it, the people who were responsible for it. The people that, when a thing like this happens with this person who puts his picture there, when a thing like this happens, to point out that this you can't do a thing like this. Those are the custodians of the law, and that is what he is concerned about. Now, he goes, and he went, and we've got it the source for this is the Mishnah. Moshe Kibbe told him, see now, Masorah, the Yeshua, the Yeshua, the Kenim, the Nevim, the Nevim, the Anshe Knesset, Agdolo, and then it goes on, and Rambam mentioned all of them. He mentioned all of them from Ezra, and then Yeshua ben Prach, Yenitai, or Bailey, all those that are mentioned in the Pirkei Avos. And then he comes as far. So the giving of the Torah was, let us say, approximately 3,250 years ago. Would that be right? Putting it at the latest. The giving of the Torah, Mount Sinai. At its latest. Making it as late as possible would be, couldn't have been after 3,250 years ago. So Rabbi Yehuda Anossi was over 1400 years later than that. 1500 years later than that. So in the year 200 before the common era, the year 200, you've already got the Mishnah. But they didn't. They wrote for themselves, but they never taught it. Whenever they taught without any notes. When it was studied without any notes, without taking any notes. It was only after it was studied that they wrote it down for themselves, to make notes for themselves. That is the chiddush of the Rambam. Not all people agree with that. That even that much writing took place. Now, it says, I want to start V'chein Hoyu HaDovor Tomid. It is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and a half lines from the top of the page. V'chein Hoyu HaDovor Tomid. And so the matter was continuously Ad Rabbeinu HaKodesh, until Rabbi Yehuda Hanossi, that's Rabbeinu HaKodesh, a direct descendant of Hillel, and in turn a direct descendant from Amelech David Amelech, a direct descendant of King David. Vehu kibetz kol ha-shmuz v'chol ha-dinim v'chol ha-bi'urim v'ha-pirushim she-shomu mi-moshe Rabbeinu v'she-lomdu beistin she-v'chol dol v'dol v'chol ha-teuro kulo, and he gathered together all those statements that had come down to him, and all those laws, and all those explanations, and all those comments, that they had heard from Moshe Rabbeinu, v'shelomdu beis din shebechol dor v'dor v'chol ha'dor kulo, and that each Sanhedrin, each beis din of every generation studied it and handed it down to further. V'chibeir me'akol sefer ha'mishnah, and it was Rabbi Yehuda Hanosi who made the Mishnayos. V'shonenu lachachomim b'rabi, and they taught it to the wise people in public. V'niglo l'chol Yisroel v'chosnu kulam, and it was became known to the whole of Israel, and they wrote it down. So the Rambam says that the Mishnah was actually written down. V'rom tu b'chol moko, and they spread the Torah in every place. Kedei shelo tishtakeach Torah shebalpeh miYisroel, in order that the oral law should never be forgotten from Israel. Now, the law more also Rabbeinu HaKodesh kach v'lo hiniach ha-dover k'moshe ho-yo, comes the big question. So why didn't Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi leave it as it was? And why did he have to make the Mishnah? And why did he have to take out from the whole body of the oral law, take out and select and do something? You know what we feel like about what do they call these books? Yes, before condensed versions, and before they
synopsis?
It's not only a synopsis. They make they extract from each from all different writers.
Anthologies.
You know, anthologies. And a person reads an anthology, becomes an authority. Then after them they start with digests. It's an anthology of an anthology of an anthology. So they said, why was it necessary to do all this? Veloma also Rabbeinu HaKodesh kach v'lo hiniach ha-dover k'moshe ho-yo. So he answers, the Rambam answers, the fish raw or shall Talmidim is ma'adim v'hulchim, because he sees that the disciples become fewer in number and poorer in quality. They are mismatim v'hulchim. They are poorer and fewer in numbers and poorer in quality. V'hatzoros mischadjos uvos, and the tzoros, the troubles of the Am Yisrael, of the people of Israel, become, there are always new troubles, and they grow. Umalchus romi po shetes bo olom umiskaberes, and the Roman Empire is becoming stronger and spreading all over the world. The Israel is galgalin v'hulchin v'kitzvos, and Israel is being traveling from one part of the world to another part of the world, and going to the uttermost ends of the world. Therefore, chibeir chibur echot. Therefore, he composed one work, the Yos Biyad Kulom, to be in the hands of everyone. In order that they should be able to learn it quickly. Learn it quickly and it shouldn't be forgotten. And so it, of course it was condensed. And so everybody was able to learn the Mishnah, and he would have the main body of the Torah Shebaal Peh, he would have it at his fingertips. That is why he did it. But I want you just to realize, the quantity of the disciples went down, their quality went down, the sorrows that went on, how much Jews had to suffer. You've got no idea the suffering that Jews had to go through in those days. And now they used to travel from one part of the world to another part of the world. I'll give you an example of it a little bit later. The Yoshev called Yomovu Vezdino, and he and his best in his Sanhedrin sat all his days. The Lindu HaMishnah Barabim, and they taught the Mishnah in public. ואלו הם גדולי החכם שהיו בביתנו של רבינו הקודש וקיבלו ממנו. And these are the names of the great ones that were in the Beis Din of Rabbi Yehuda Hanosi, and they received the Torah from him. Shimon v'Gamliel bono, his sons Shimon and Gamliel, the Rabbi Ephes, and all these people appear in the Gemara, the Rabbi Hanino ben Chamo. Some of them don't appear in the Babylonian Talmud, appear only in the Jerusalem Talmud. The Rabbi Chiyo, the Rav, the Rabbi Yanai, Uvar Kapora, Ushmuel, the Rabbi Yochanan, the Rabbi Hoshia, the Elu Hein Gedolei Achachom Shekiblu Bimenu. These are the great ones amongst us of his day who received it from him, the Imohem. And they had thousands and tens of thousands of other chachomim. Now you can imagine what their standard was if the Rambam calls them chachomim.
But in their generation they were worthy to be mentioned by name.
But the Rambam called, and he says, in their thousands and in their tens of thousands. Want you to realize what it is. What it is. Afal pi she elu ayud alef kiblu merabeinu akodesh, although these 11 received from Rabbeinu akodesh for omdu the midrasho, and they stood in his base on midrash, Rabbi Yochanan was the youngest of them all. Va'achar kein hoyo talmid le'Rabbi Yanai, va'achar kein hoyo talmid le'Rabbi Yanai ve'kibel mimenu Torah. He was the youngest of them all, and when his teacher Rabbi Yehuda Hanosi died, then Rabbi Yochanan was the one who accepted Rabbi Yanai, who was an older disciple of Rabbi Yehuda HaKodesh, accepted him as his teacher. Ushmuel kibel me Rabbi Hanino bar Chomo, Rav kibel sifro v'sifri levayir ulehudia ikorei hamitzvo, v'shtev Rabbi Chiyo kibel atesefte levayir inyone hamishna. I just want to explain that part of it to you. So, in the year 200, Rabbi Yehuda Hanosi had composed his Mishnah. Then what happened? That there was this vast body of oral law that was still floating about. So now these are already not only the disciples of Rabbi Yehuda Hanosi, but the disciples of the disciples of Rabbi Yehuda Hanosi. And they did certain other works. And the other works that they did were known as Baraisas. The word Baraisa means outside. It wasn't included into the Mishnah. So we've got a work that was done on what they did was Rabbi Shmuel, for example, took the book of Shemos. And he took the halachic parts in the book of Shemos, and the braises, he put them into the order of the Torah. For example, he starts off with a book with a sedra of bow, and the first commandment that is given in the book of Shemos is the calendar, Chodesh Hazeh Lochem. So he has selected braises dealing with the calendar. Then comes the whole laws of Pesach. So he selected braises that were still floating about that were not included in the Mishnah, and he put them into the Mechilta. Then we've got where Rav did it, the Sifri and the Sifro. He did it on Vayikro, on Bamidbor, and Devarim it was done. So that was another set of braises. Then there was the Tosefta. It was collected to the Tosefta. The Tosefta is in the back of some of the Gemaras. You will find the Tosefta. There are also varieties that were collected together. this was works in addition to the Mishnah, but they were called Baraisas, as they, since they stood outside of the Mishnah, belonging to exactly the same period. And then, and in addition to that, there are what I call the floating Baraisas, that weren't in, didn't go into the Mishnah, didn't go into the Matilda, didn't go into the Sifri, didn't go into the Sifro, didn't go into the Tosefta. Just floating. And we find them quoted sometimes in the Gemara. And then I'll point out to you, when it's a floating Baraisa, I'll point out to you, it's a floating Baraisa, it's not in any of these verses. It was there and they put it down, and it's preserved to us only because it's in the Gemara. But you can imagine what was lost. You can just imagine what was lost and what we haven't got. But these are, this is what we have got. Now, I am ending it here for the time being. And then Rabbi Yochanan, who was the youngest disciple of Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, remained on in Palestine, as it was then, but Shmuel, Rav and Shmuel, moved over then to Babylon. And now we come to the 3rd century. They moved over to Babylon. You can see why. Because Rome was spreading its claws all over, ready to take in everything. They were going through a terribly hard time, so they moved over to Babylon, where there was a Jewish community from hundreds of years already, but it wasn't a very strong Jewish community. And Rav went to Suro, and he established a school in Suro. And Shmuel went to Nahar Dor and established a school in Nahar Dor. And in the Gemara, we've already met Rav and Shmuel as heads of those schools. And now we have a very interesting situation where there are schools in Palestine and there are schools in Babylon. And that is the period of the Gemara that we are doing. Schools in Palestine and schools in Babylon. And out of the schools in Babylon, they developed the Talmud Babli, the Babylonian Talmud, and out of the schools in Eretz Yisrael, they developed the Jerusalem Talmud. And these two developed side by side. So that will give you some idea. And that is as far as we will take this today. We'll get on to our Gemara.
Can I ask you for a clarification on your historical description?
Yes.
And that is, you say around the beginning of the 3rd century of the Common Era is when they went because of Rome's pressures to Babylon. Is that what you're saying?
Just say it again.
They went to Babylon then?
When?
Was it the 3rd century?
3rd century, that's correct, yes.
Okay. I thought that Rome had pretty much thrown the Jews out of Israel much sooner than that.
Aristocracy out of Jerusalem, but the people were still
there. That went on. That went on. The Babylonians moved them. That was 586 BCE. They moved them out.
So is Rabbi Yochanan, is he the one who was the brother-in-law of married his sister Rosh Lakish on the condition that he would become a Rosh Hashanah? The one who was the gladiator, his sister.
This is the Bakoka Rebellion, that was in 135. That was in 135, yes. All right. There is an apology from Phil Silverman, who is in the East Coast today. We're there to the East Coast.
you know the tragic circumstances. His wife died, and so according to the dean, as we learned it, the dean was, they did something which isn't quite according to the Gemara as we've learned it, but they got a stuff from Yosha Ber Soloveitchik of Boston, and Yosha Ber Soloveitchik of Boston worked it, I'm quite sure, on this Gemara, on the Gemara on Daf Dalet of an Aleph, that the funeral took place. And once the funeral took place, and the funeral took place before the chuppah, first the funeral took place and then the chuppah took place. And once the funeral took place, then the deen is that there are 7 days of mourning, as we learned. If the wedding would have taken place first, there would have been 7 days of rejoicing. So they had the 7 days of mourning, and that which they observed exactly as the Gemara describes it to us, that who yoshem beina ha'a noshim v'hiyacheinu beina noshim, for the week of mourning, the chosen sleeps amongst the men and the kallah sleeps amongst the women, and after the week of mourning began the 7 days of rejoicing. So they are in the midst now of the 7 days of rejoicing. And so the young couple went to New York to be with the Chosin's parents, and Mr. Phil Silverman is spending this weekend, he's probably be back tomorrow morning, then he's leaving New York sometime tonight, and he's spending it with them. He asked to give him an apology. And Charles Charles Kaufman sends an apology. Anybody else?
Larry
Siegel is out of town in business, and he sends an apology.
My father sent an apology.
Father.
He has a report to see
it. Good. Thank you very much. Fine. Now, we are on the subject of whether the first meal can take place on a Friday night. What the Gemara did, and the reason why it shouldn't take place on a Friday night, the one reason is because of Chaburah. It makes the first Friday night that the person lives with a kalo, he makes a Chaburah, he makes a wound. And a wound is not permitted. It's not permitted to make a wound on Shabbos. The source of the deen that you're not allowed to make a wound on Shabbos is it's one of the Lamed Tes Melachos. But the question is, from where does it come? And I explained to you how the Lamed Tes Melachos arose, how the 39 different categories of works arose, because the work, the great work that was done when the Bnei Yisrael were in the wilderness was the erection of the Mishkan, the building of the Mishkan. They call it the tabernacle in English. I prefer calling it the Mishkan. We know what we're speaking about. So when they erected the Mishkan, there was a lot of work that had to be done. And they were prohibited from doing that work on Shabbos. So we know any type of work that was done in the Mishkan was prohibited to be done on Shabbos. The strange thing is, you can't possibly imagine any kind of work other than the work that was done in the... There is no other new category of work that you can work out, because everything seems to have been done in the Mishkan there. Where does making a wound come in? It's not making a wound, but shechito. For example, they needed the skins of the animals for certain hangings. And in order to have the skins of the animals, they had to slaughter the animals, they had to do shechita. That was not allowed to be done on Shabbos. So shechita is making a wound. And therefore making a wound is not permitted to do that on Shabbos. And the question that was asked is this How do we understand this? And we came more or less to the conclusion that the wound is a dovor she'eino miskavet. If, for example, he doesn't think he wants to make a wound, when one slaughters an animal, you want to slaughter an animal. But he doesn't think of making a wound. We say that he is hanuas atzmo hu miskavet. He's thinking of his own pleasure. But thinking of his own pleasure, but in the act, a wound is made. But the wound is a dovo she'enu miskaven. We discussed all that question. Certain other difficulties arose, and we covered all that ground. And then the Gemara said, well, but let us see if we can bring a proof from a Mishnah. And the Gemara tries to bring a proof from a Mishnah in Nido, and the Gemara says we cannot bring that proof. It doesn't accept it, it rejects it, because all we can say is from that Mishnah in Nido is that you can make a further bior on Friday night. If you already made a bior on Wednesday night and the bior wasn't complete, one can go on making a bior, but from the beginning to make a bior, that we said we've got no proof from it, it wasn't conclusive. So from there we went on to the other question. It says a chosam is potter from reading the Shema on the first night. And if he didn't make the bior on the first night, then he can make it on the second night. The first night, which night is the first night? Wednesday night. So if he didn't make the bior on Wednesday night, then he doesn't read the Shema on Thursday night, because on Thursday night he's going to make a bior. If he didn't make the bior on Thursday night, it says on Friday night he doesn't read the Shema, on Saturday night he doesn't read the Shema, but not longer than that. Now, what is the reason that we came to, what was the conclusion that we came to? Why does a chosan not read the Shema? If he's going to make a bior on Wednesday night, he doesn't read the Shema. Why doesn't he read the Shema?
He's a Torah over another Tarula.
He's a Taru. Oh. But really what the halachic reason is, and that is where Rashi comes in, because of the principle Oseh b'mitzvah potur min ha-mitzvah. And that is the principle we've got. Oseh b'mitzvah potur min ha-mitzvah. The law is that if I am busy doing a mitzvah and another mitzvah comes to hand, I don't have to do that mitzvah, I'm doing this mitzvah. For example, if I'm busy putting on my tefillin and a poor man comes in and wants an alm, then the law is that I don't have to give it to him. But what we used to do in Israel is we used to put 5 coins. When we used to go in Dublin, we used to put 5 coins. They all made them all the same. 5 coins. And we used to Dublin. And the poor man used to come and take 1 coin. And the next poor man used to come and take another coin.
Higher quality
and then burgers. And usually I had 1 or 2 coins left at the end of the day. But that is the way it was done. You see, so I shouldn't be disturbed. But the law is that an oseg permits or potter min ha-mitzvah. I don't have to give him anything really. I'm doing a mitzvah. Whilst I'm doing a mitzvah, I don't have to do it. So here he is doing a mitzvah, the chosam is doing a mitzvah. And don't forget that the first bior is a mitzvah. That is a special mitzvah, the first bior. So the chosam is doing a mitzvah. When he's doing a mitzvah, he doesn't have to do another mitzvah of Kriya Shema. The only question, I'm coming to you, Mark, the only question is, when does the time for reading the Shema arrive? 8:15. The time to read the Shema. When is he going to make the bior? 10:00. So let him read the Shema 9:15 and make the bior 10:00. That he's already told, he's already busy with his mitzvah, he's concerned about his mitzvah. That all is included in the mitzvah. You follow? All that is included in the mitzvah. Have I made myself clear? Do you understand that principle? Or would you like me to give you an example, another example of that principle? You want me to give you another example?
Yeah.
I'll give you another example of that principle. Is a law that if anything is lost and I come across it, I have got to take charge of it and see that it's returned to its owner. If someone loses a cow, then the law is that I've got to take that cow and I've got to see to it that it's returned to its owner. Let us make it easier and assume that I know who the owner is. Now, the only time that I don't, the only people who are exempt from doing it is if Eino Lefi Kavodo, not in accordance with his dignity. The man has got an official position, he is a very respected man in the community, and he's got to walk down the main street with somebody's cow. It's ridiculous. It makes him look absurd. Then he is absolved from it. But otherwise, he's got to do it. Now, we can have a situation, let us say, it's Dr. Cohen who finds a cow. But the trouble is that this cow is on the cemetery. And Dr. Cohen is a Cohen. Can't go to the cemetery. And this cow is feeding amongst the graves. It's feeding on the cemetery. So the only way one can reach the cow is to go onto the cemetery. So the Gemara says, but please don't pasken from this because there are other considerations. I'm just taking one particular passage. The Gemara goes and comes to a different conclusion. But at one stage the Gemara says like this. It's a positive commandment to return the animal. It says, "Hoshevteshivein," you shall surely return. So it's a positive commandment that is on Dr. J.D. to return this animal. But Dr. J.D. is a Kohen, and it says in the Torah that a Kohen mustn't come into contact with the dead. And going over a grave is coming into contact with the dead, but it is a positive precept as against a negative precept. That is asay against the losase. If it's an asay against the losase, we take the asay, we take the positive precept. Have you got that? You follow that? If there is a clash between a positive precept and a negative precept, we take the positive precept. Is that all right? You know that if a bris falls on the Shabbos, although you're making a wound, and you're not allowed to make a wound on Shabbos, we'll have the bris on Shabbos, because this is a positive commandment. On the eighth day it must take place. It's also not a very good example, because there's another reason for it also, but just leave it at that, to give you examples. Now this comes an interesting thing. The Gemara, the Rishonim ask a question like this. How can we say that the positive commandment rules over the negative commandment, and Dr. J.D. has got to take the cow, has got to go onto the Pesach forest, onto the cemetery, because it's a positive commandment to return the cow, and it's a negative commandment that he doesn't go onto the cemetery. So the question is asked by the Rishonim,
that when, as soon as Dr. J.D. goes onto the cemetery, he is already transgressing the precept of he mustn't come into contact with a dead body. When does he fulfill the positive precept, you shall surely return it to its owner? When
not,
does he fulfill
not
it?
Till later.
When he gives it back. When Dr. J.D. goes back and has taken the cow all the way back, and he, then only does he fulfill the positive precept. So how can you say that the positive precept does away with the negative precept? They don't meet each other at all. They're at different times. The answer is, as soon as he moves towards the cow, he's already doing the mitzvah of returning it. You follow? As soon as he moves towards the cow, he's already doing the mitzvah of returning it. It ends, the mitzvah ends only when he is given the cow over, then the mitzvah ends. But it begins from the very moment that he goes towards. Is that clear? So already, the chosen is already busy with it. He's already, that is already an oseik for mitzvah and his potter mina mitzvah. Is that clear? What do you want to ask?
Well, a couple things.
Just one moment. Yes. Mark, you wanted to ask something. I'm sorry, David.
Yes,
Mark,
yes, yes.
The first bia, is this a mitzvah derisa? Is it say one of the tired mitzvahs?
No, it doesn't quite work that way. This is the return, as I'll tell you where this discussion comes from. There's other reasons why, but it's called a mitzvah. Do you follow?
It's not part of Kol Vav.
It's not part of?
It's a separate mitzvah from Kol Vav.
It's separate mitzvah from Kol Vav. A separate mitzvah of two of
them. I see.
It's a
even though it's completely
provable. Yes. Yes, it's a separate mitzvah from true urbu. Mm-hmm. It's not part of true urbu.
You make true
urbu is the mitzvah to have children. It's a mitzvah to have children. You follow? It's a mitzvah to have children. And it's one of the mitzvahs that one doesn't make a brocha on. Because when a man has an association with his wife, he doesn't know whether there's going to be a child from this association, so he can't make a brocha. So we don't make a brocha for it. But that's got nothing to do with this. Be'ilas mitzvah has got nothing to do with pru'ubu. It's a different thing. You know, when we do these things, I take the opportunity of pointing out a lot of things to you. Because in that way you get a broader view of Torah, you know, to get a better feel of it. I'll give you just an example. It says in the Torah, Kabedes of Ichovesimecho, honor your father and your mother. One commandment. Then it says in the Torah, Ish imelva ovitirol, each man shall fear his mother and his father. So you've got two laws. The first law is honor thy father and thy mother, and the second law is each man shall fear his mother and his father. Two laws, and these are two separate laws. So there is a law in the Torah that one must honor one's father and one's mother. What's the difference between honoring and fearing? I wouldn't know it. I go to the Torah Shebal Peh, and the Torah Shebal Peh explains it to me. Honoring a parent is bringing him something. He's sitting at the table. You go to the kitchen, you bring him his coffee. That is honoring a father. Supporting a father is honoring a father. Helping him on with his coat is honoring a father. What is fearing a father? Not sitting in one's father's seat. Fearing a father. When the father speaks, not interrupting him whilst he's speaking. Fearing a father. Are we pardoned? Those are the differences.
We're all thinking of our children.
outward world.
How important it is. It's judgment enough the Father was speaking. So judgment in the Father seated. Now, so that is plain from the Torah. There's another law. You can't say it's one of the Tariyat mitzvahs, but the Rambam would speaks about it. It says, Kaveid es ovicho ve es imecho. And the word es sometimes means the accusative, and it also means with, together with. So honor together with your father and your mother. What does that mean? The eldest brother. One must give honor to one's eldest brother. He is to be honored. Got the idea?
I hope so.
Do you want to make it two more difficult? So it is the eldest brother must also be honored. So you've got another law really of honoring. I just want to hear how far it goes. Then you've got another thing. This is in the book of Psalms. It's in the 15th Psalm where David HaMelech says, he's describing, it's a lovely psalm. David HaMelech is describing what once upon a time in England they used to call a gentleman. We call him a Jew. What is a Jew? Let's see what David HaMelech says. Mi yogur bo'olecho. Who lives in Hashem's tent? In his mi yishkon b'har kodesheicho. Who dwells on your holy mountain? And he says, he who walketh uprightly and doeth righteousness and speaketh truth in his heart and has no slander on his tongue and does not do evil to his fellow and does not bear reproach against his neighbor, in whose eyes a vile person is despised. A vile person, you don't make a fuss of him, you despise him. He's a vile thing, you despise him. The Ethire Hashem Yechabeh, and he fears and he honors those who fear Hashem. So there's a law of honoring those who fear Hashem. If a person's a God fearing person, you must honor him. You follow. And all, but you can't, it's not a law in the Torah, it doesn't say. But it's all inherent in these laws of honoring father and mother and all, inherent in all these things. Have you got the idea?
I raised the question because I thought that the nature of the mitzvah, where it's derived from, might have a bearing on how we can push off another mitzvah.
No,
I was wondering if
I had it there. No, it's just that is a very big mitzvah. You know, you have the same sort of handling in the Rambam. If you remember, I quoted to you a Rambam where the Rambam says visiting the sick is a law from the Torah Shebaal Peh, from the Chachomim. They introduce the law of visiting the sick, of comforting those who mourn. And then he ends and he says, of course, all this is included in you shall love your next one as yourself. It's all included in that. As to suggest that the Chachomim would never put down anything if there wasn't an absolute source in the Torah itself for it. That is the way it works. Have you got it, Mark? Yes.
My question.
Yes.
Is, one word, I'm confused about what happens when the negative mitzvah and the positively phrased mitzvah come into conflict, and you say we do the aseh.
The positive.
We take that one. It seems that in the example, the one we've been dealing with, of the Kohen not going near nothing defiled.
Yes.
It talks about your duty to bury a person if you come across, and you have to do this, but if you're a Kohen, you don't, unless it's a very close relative. So you're always going to have the positive against the negative in that case. So it would sound, at first, like the rule against a Kohen coming in touch, coming across a dead body would always be overridden.
Why? Actually, it's not overridden, you see. The law is that one can't, Doctor, I'm sorry, I'm taking you as an example, you don't mind, that when Dr. J.D. can't go on the septic website because they, in addition to a negative precept that he's not allowed to go onto the cemetery, there is a positive precept also. There are two precepts, there's a negative precept and a positive precept. He must be holy. So the positive precept does away with the negative precept, but remains a positive precept still.
2-1.
So you can't do it, you see.
Yeah, and my next point.
So it doesn't work out like that at all.
I hear what you're saying. Yes. This is purely practical, and it may be based on a pretty simple-minded idea of what a humble man is. But when you say that a man who is a very good man, a man with kavod, and a man, say, who's a good Torah scholar,
yes,
and it would be beneath him to be seen pulling a cowl on the streets. And you've often given us an example of how the man with the most kavod attached along these lines is the man who thinks he's less, yet he would not think that he's such, pardon the expression, a highfalutin type. So a man like that comes across the cow. He's a man of Torah. He's very learned. Does he say to himself, I'm too good to take this cow? Or isn't he most likely the one to say, of all people, I'm the one who's got to take this cow to his owner? How does that all get added up?
That's not really a difficult question. It's the question is, how is he respected in the community? If he is expected in the community as a representative for the Torah, he doesn't take any honor for himself.
But he's expected to have an accurate sense of what people think of him, rightly or wrongly.
He's a representative of the Torah, then he must act as a representative of the Torah. And if he doesn't, he's failing his duty. So there isn't really a difficulty as far as that is concerned.
There might be I'm thinking of a sin of excessive humility that Shmuel accused Shaul that Tana Tabe Nefa Roshi Te Yisrael
Vata. And that's right. Person must, when you say a person must be humble, it's not false humility. He knows he's got a true assessment of himself, which is very difficult to have. It mustn't be false humility. That is everything. All right, now let us go on from there. Happy?
Yes.
Fine. Right. So, that is the principle on which Rashi works. Because an Oseik b'mitzvah is potur min ha-mitzvah. And if you would look in the Rashi, Mishum de Tori Potir, Rashi says earlier, my love, says Rashi, hide the potele mikriya shema belele shabbos mishum de tori be mitzvah de boy le miva. He is tori de beha osek be mitzvah potter in a mitzvah, and one who is osek in a mitzvah is potter in a mitzvah. Here it is. By the potele mikriat shema balayel velele shabbos mishum the tori b'mitzvah. What does it mean? The tori b'mitzvah, says Rashi, the boy lemivar, because he wants to make a beer. They were also the mitzvah potter mina mitzvah, and the person who is engaged in the mitzvah is potter from mitzvah. Got it there?
Yeah.
Got it? Yes, you got it. That's all it is. That is the principle. But I just want you to see how important it is to see that Rashi, so you know the reasoning behind it. And that will work out very nicely. Now, it says that if the chosen is potur mikriya shema lailo horishon admet soi shabbos imle osamaisa. It's a Mishnah says that the potur, the chosen, doesn't read the kriya, the shema, on the first night, that is on Wednesday night, and because he's going to do a mitzvah, he's going to do the bio, and if he hasn't done it, he's potter until Saturday night. So the Gemara takes it, well, it's very simple here. If he didn't do the bio on Wednesday night, he's potter on Thursday night. If he didn't do it on Thursday night, he's potter on Friday night. Why is he potter on Friday night? Because he hasn't done it, he's going to do it now. So that's the reason he's potter from reading the Shema. Because he's going to do a mitzvah, but we see from that a chosen can do the bio, the first bio on Friday night. And that seems to be a very good proof. And that is the proof.